Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's the Coach Home. It's an FA Cup special. I am John Gibbons hosting this week. I'm joined by Mo Stewart. And who else could we start with? We've got to start with Lincoln City. it's the story. Well, one of the stories. There's quite a few stories in this FA Cup run so far. But we'll talk more about that at the end, Mo, about the much maligned FA Cup and this competition that apparently needs saving. I saw the manager of Lincoln, or might have been the chairman, Gary, say, if people are saying that there's no magic left in the FA Cup, they haven't been spending much time in Lincoln recently. And I think that seems exactly right. You're very much enjoying it.
Yeah, very much indeed. That was Danny Carey, I think, said that, the manager. We thought it was magic when we knocked Oldham out in the second round, to be honest. So, you know, that was kind of one of those memorable nights. And you think, wow, well, you know, that's our season done. We've done Oldham. We've had a good result. But it's a gift that keeps on giving at the moment. And you don't get many days like we got at Turf Moor as a football fan. You know, it's one of those that stays with you forever, without doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's real kind of, you know, Hollywood movie stuff at the moment, how they seem to be writing these things. It's worth pointing out that Burnley had a really good team out. You know, I was watching the game and, you know, Keane's playing. He's one of the most highly regarded centre-halves in the country at the moment. There's Graham Vokes up front. There's Joey Barton in there. It's not people making 10, 11 changes and playing reserves who kind of can't be bothered, really. It was a really strong Burnley team. They had a good go. Burnley had to defend well. They had to play well. Keeper makes a couple of good saves. But, I mean, that goal, I love the way he shoves his mate out the way. Yeah. But, I mean, the end just went absolutely ballistic.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And like you say, Raggett shoved Dale Southworth. Dale's only been on loan a couple of games. And Sean Raggett, he's an uncomplicated player and you don't want to get in his way. But no, like you say, Burnley had a full, you know, a relatively strong first team out. But Burnley, like, you know, they expect you to have the ball in the Premier League. And they like to sit back and do what we did to them. And I think that was where they were uncomfortable. When we first got the draw, I was kind of bemoaning our luck, thinking, you know, why couldn't we have been away at an Arsenal or United? In actual fact, the draw was really kind to us because it did give us a winnable game. But we're a very good side. You know, we're not, it's not a team of candlestick makers and bakers doing a, you know, On a magical run. This is a football team that could compete in League One.
I think that is worth pointing out, because Lincoln is still top of the conference, even though that you must be quite a few games behind now, but still top of that conference. And it's a competitive conference. I mean, we know all about Chamois Rovers here in Liverpool. You know, they're a big club for that level. They're a professional team. I know there's a lot of money knocking around teams like Forest Green as well. And so to be top of that league, which has always been competitive to conference, but especially feels like now at the moment, there's a lot of professional teams in there. And so to be top of that, even though, you know, you've played less games than these teams I've been mentioning, just shows that, you know, this Lincoln side is a good one, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're 3 points clear, 2 games in hand. It's very, very competitive. I mean, Tranmere are, as you say, they're a good side, traditionally a Football League club, and they're not the best side that we've seen at Sinselbang this season. There's an awful lot of good teams in there, and the two up, two down makes it probably the most competitive league in Europe. I don't think there's very many others where you could finish sort of third in the league or second in your league and still have to go through playoffs. It is hard. Our games are piling up. I mean, we've got Boreham Wood in the FA Trophy on Saturday. If we win that, by my calculations, there won't be enough Tuesdays and Saturdays for us to squeeze the rest of our games in. Mm-hmm. So then we're going to have to look at maybe playing Friday, Monday, Thursday. I don't know. But we'll take it. You know, at the moment, we've got a good squad. We've got a deep squad. We're playing good football. And it's on to North Ferriby tomorrow night.
I think this is one of the situations where confidence and momentum can carry you through when your legs are aching, especially when it gets to those bigger games towards the end of the season. So I'll agree with you there. I think once you get into this situation, you can't really afford to start thinking about tiredness, because it kind of becomes a disease that just infects the whole squad. Oh, we're tired, we should be tired. And that's when it starts to come out on the pitch.
Yeah, I don't think that the manager and the backroom staff let the players believe they're tired. I mean, they've been managed excellently. We went all the way to Welling in the FA Trophy the other day, and they gave seven or eight first-team players the afternoon off, and we had enough strength in depth to bring players through. We're not talking about really young kids that have got no experience. We're talking about players like Josh Gianelli, who's on loan from Burnley, Joe Ward from Brighton. So they've done a very, very good job. They're very astute, the managers. They've gone about it very cleverly. And like you say, there's only been one game where I've looked at the side and thought they looked tired, and we got beat at Barrow, a very physical side. But that happens. You know, nobody goes through a whole season without losing a game, bar somebody like, you know, Arsenal once in a blue moon. So we just have to get used to the fact we will lose a game at some point. That's what we'll...
One other thing about the Burnley game, was it quite satisfying to you to see them losing their rag a little bit? Not just on the pitch, but obviously some of Sean Dyche's post-match comments weren't exactly the most charitable he's ever been.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I was a little bit disappointed in Sean Dyche because he's been on the other side of the coin, and he knows what it's all about. It was incredibly satisfying to watch Joey Barton losing his rag. I don't get me wrong. I've actually, up until recently, I was a bit of a Joey Barton fan. I mean, he's combative and he's controversial, but he's a character. But trying to get a non-league centre forward sent off in the way that he did was absolutely disgraceful. I mean, we played Ipswich in one of the earlier rounds, and what a fantastic club they were. The players were sporting, the manager was sporting, the game was played in the right manner. So I think it was disappointing in that respect on Saturday. But, you know, if you're willing and considering, we're getting under team skins, of course, as fans, that's fantastic. So
yeah. Yes, I mean, I guess now it's kind of what next and what you look forward to, because you've got this kind of intriguing draw, really. And the game's tomorrow night. I'm sure everyone in Lincoln will be watching it, and it's just an intriguing draw, is it? Or do you want the Arsenal game, which is, you know, glamour? It's a big payday for the side, I'm sure, as well. And then one maybe you still fancy because, you know, you're playing so well, or the Sutton tie, which is Lincoln City presumably will be favourites for, you know, you're above them in the league and things like that. So is it a difficult one, or have you made your mind up who you'd like to see go through?
I'd like to see Arsenal for the day out. We're not going to win the FA Cup.
But you're one game from Wembley, though. Only one game from Wembley, though, isn't it?
We are, but we're three games from Wembley in the FA Trophy. I think we will go to Wembley. Look, if Sutton win it, brilliant, but the thing is, we have to go and play on a plastic pitch and take 300 fans with us. And that would kind of, it would take away this this building crescendo, if you like. You know, it keeps getting better and better, and then have to go to Gander Green Lane and play on an artificial pitch, I think would be a real anticlimax. We want the big draw. Looking back through history in the FA Cup, we've never had a big draw. We've never had an Arsenal, Man United, Liverpool, going back as far as you can in history. And I think for 9,000 or 10,000 of our fans to go to Arsenal and take half the gate receipts, the television money as well, which is what it's all about, For me, that's what I would prefer. I was just glad we didn't get Millwall. I just didn't want Millwall away.
Well, I suppose the Emirates isn't really that far from Wembley either.
Yeah, you'll see it on the train on the way back, and then maybe you can make some plans for it when you are back there, which I'm sure you will be. I mean, I who knows, you might be Arsenal. That's the kind of the way it's going at the moment. In terms of, you know, there's a lot of talk about what cup runs can do for football, for non-league football clubs, and people always talk about the money. But what I'm interested in your perspective on, Gary, is in terms of energising the area into supporting Lincoln City Football Club, because, you know, it's a potentially quite a big catchment area, isn't it, in terms of area? But there must be the temptation for people to support Premier League teams and support Manchester. I know that I used to spend quite a bit of time down in Lincolnshire, and it felt like everyone seemed to support Man United or Liverpool. And in terms of what impact do you think this will have in terms of persuading kids, actually, you know, we've got a really good football team here, and the way of supporting, not just maybe as our second team, but the ones that we go and watch every Saturday. Do you think, especially if next year you are in the Football League, can you see it having a real impact that way?
Yeah, I would hope so. I think in football, the city of Lincoln is a little bit of a sleeping giant. I mean, we got a university in the early 2000s. The population has swelled, demographic has changed, there's lots of young people there now, and we've had a very poor football club, if I'm being honest, and it hasn't attracted a large number of fans. So you're quite right. I think with this success on the pitch, there'll be a lot of people coming through the city at the moment doing sports media degrees and that sort of thing who will get hooked. They will come along, they will be involved, they'll be doing their different projects in university projects, etc. And then there's the returning fans as well. I mean, in the 70s, the early 80s, we could happily command 7, 8, 10, 12,000 fans. And I think a lot of those people became very disillusioned with the football club. So certainly there are other rewards away from the financials. I mean, it makes it harder for the likes of me to get a ticket without a season ticket. So that's something I'll have to review in the new year. But I looked earlier, we played Guiseley in the FA Cup fourth qualifying round. We took 112 fans there. And realistically, if it is Arsenal, I could see us selling out a 9,000 allocation. And to come that far since October is a testament to the will for a good football club within the city. So maybe we're on the cusp of us re-establishing ourselves as a League 2 / League 1 team for a few years to come.
Anything else, man?
I was just going to ask, how many games have you played in this season's round? Because which round was it? Was it one of the preliminary rounds you started in? I think I was reading, it must be something like about 8 or 9.
Yeah, we started in the fourth qualifying round. That was 2 games.
So then that plus, wow. So that's, yeah, at least 6 or 7 ties. It's ridiculous.
I think it's 8 ties we played at the moment, yeah.
Yeah, so not bad at all. So if you think about that with then Conference League games, with then the FA Trophy and things like that, then it is a long season. It'll be interesting to see what happens, as you say, if kind of replays happen now and things like that, because if you are running out there, it'll be a fixture pile-up, but a nice problem to have. Well, I'm sure you'll be watching the game tonight as well, everyone in Lincoln, and I'll be watching it as well, just with half an eye on kind of what will go on in that tie, because, you know, it's a fantastic one. But as you say, it's a good football team that you've got there, and it's worth everything. Everyone remembering that. I think we can be a bit patronising how we talk about kind of lower league teams, but you know, Lincoln to me, watching that game yesterday, just seemed a good football team. We were well in that game, and you know, got a, I mean, I don't know about deserved victory, but you certainly good value for it.
I don't think you beat that many good teams without being able to play well.
Yeah.
Regardless, I mean, some people may be able to get a lucky result here or there, but they've beaten 3 or 4 consistently good teams.
Yeah, I agree. Just thank you for those comments, because I feel that the national media at times can be a little bit patronising towards non-league teams. You know, we've been billed as the centre forward who worked for the JCB factory, the winger who's a hairdresser, the Lincoln Minnows. And like you've just said there, and it's nice to hear, you don't consistently beat teams if you haven't got a bit about you. Yeah, on the face of it, Burnley were the better side and they missed some chances and we took ours, but we were never out of the game.
Yeah.
And it was the same all the way through the cup run. So, you know, you're quite right. And it's nice to hear. It's nice to guys like yourselves recognising that, you know, we're not just a pub team, we've got lucky.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thanks a lot to Gary to come on, and best of luck, and hopefully we'll get you on again before a quarter-final game, whoever that is against. If you want to read more about the Lincoln story and about how they're getting on and follow them throughout the year, Gary does a fantastic blog called Stacey West Blog, so check them out on there and you can get more. But in the meantime, Gary, thanks very much.
Thanks a lot.
And from now, we'll be going from Lincoln City to Manchester City. I'm from Lincoln City to Manchester City, one end of the football spectrum to the other, and it is great to be joined by Stephen Tudor. He's the Daisy Cutter on Twitter and on his writing and on all his fantastic things he does, so keep an eye on him from there. But today we're going to get you to talk about Manchester City. A 0-0, Steve, that you could probably do without. You don't necessarily want a replay going into the Champions League.
Yeah, it's not ideal. We did have a spare week, though, so it kind of fit in. You know, it could have been a lot worse, basically.
Yeah.
But it wasn't wholly unexpected, to be honest. I mean, we rested a lot of players, and we have a disparity in our squad. You know, we've got players there who are basically fading giants and bad buys who bubble beneath the kind of first team. And when they're given an opportunity, they rarely impress. So, to be fair, I would have took the draw. and take us back to our place and just, you know, stay in the cup, really.
Yeah, I mean, and he's pointing out that Huddersfield are a good team, and I think sometimes we judge these results based on what we associate with the name of the football club rather than the actuality. And if you'd have got a draw away at Newcastle at St James's Park, people probably would have said, oh, fair enough, you know, not a bad result, get them back at home. But because it's Huddersfield, it's kind of not... It's seen as a kind of worse result, really, when in actual fact, you know, the right up there at the top of the league with them.
Yeah, balancing that out, though, is the fact that they rested 7 players themselves. I've got to say, I love the coverage afterwards. You know how it's just become the cliche now of saying teams are disrespected.
Yeah.
You know, particularly Manish on Match of the Day felt the need to bring it up and then just kind of mumbled his way through the fact that, you know, this championship side at home to kind of, you know, a shoot side chose to also rest 7 players.
Yeah.
And you know,
doesn't fit the narrative.
Well, I mean, I was going to talk about this later, but maybe we can do it now, because I think what the top teams always kind of get slammed on this, and everyone went to town on Jurgen Klopp and really enjoyed themselves doing it. But if you actually look at what the teams at the top of the championship doing, they're resting far, far more, and their squads aren't as deep. And so you're thinking, you look at someone like Leeds United. Leeds United went out in the last round and they made 10 changes, and I would say that Liverpool can probably cope with 10 changes easier than Leeds can, because they've just got more money and bigger squads and things like that. But, you know, we had a Leeds fan on a few days ago and asked him, and he's like, well, we're trying to get in the Premier League, it's just too much money, you know, we're not going to win the FA Cup. And so in the situation where, you know, league games are massive for us, the Championship you play about 400 times anyway or something like that, and so, you know, he can't be angry with the manager for making that decision. And but it seems to me that actually the ones who are all the focus is a lot of the focus on the top clubs, where actually it's the bottom six of the Premier League and the top six in the Championship, or maybe even more than that, like bottom eight, top eight, who are the ones who are going, do you know what, we just can't do this, it's too much.
Yeah, it makes more sense. You know, for a team like Huddersfield, if they get into the Premier League, that's massive for them. It's kind of, you know, era defining for them. Whereas, you know, to beat City, obviously they'd have a great day, but would you expect them to then go on to make it to Wembley? It's doubtful. But, you know, they're putting together a great team at Huddersfield, and even with the changes they made, they were impressive. So, it makes more sense, I think, for surviving the Championship to rest players. And it's just a fact of life now that the FA Cup has lowered in its priority.
Yeah.
You know, the money does talk when it comes to the league, and particularly the Premier League. And, you know, really now you're looking at kind of Champions League, Premier League, FA Cup, League. And it's sad, it does leave a sour taste in the mouth, but at the same time, it's just reality and how it is.
I just wonder whether all these people who work for the BBC would be that bothered about the FA Cup if it wasn't the only football coverage they had.
I wonder.
Well, I love that. I'll be always trying to portray, you know, the magic of the cup as well, and then always choose to go for United against some kind of no-overs. But, you know, for them, it's business for them as much as anyone else.
It's interesting, though, Steve, going a bit more about the changes. With Huddersfield, they did make 6 changes. I'd say Wagner as a coach is probably a bit more used to making changes, though he does tend to rotate a little bit more. And there was it felt like they were a little bit more cohesive. But like you said, some of the City guys, they looked like players who didn't believe that they had a chance of getting back into the first team, and they almost played that way.
That's exactly no one heard that. It's you look at Chelsea's side, and you know the youngsters they brought in as well. You know, hungry, but they genuinely believe that they can force their way into that kind of side under Conte. Whereas with City, it's players who essentially have 1 foot towards the exit door. You know, players such as Del, Fernando, Nolito, who's just, I don't know, it's homesickness. I don't know what it is, but something mental is going on there. You know, he's just unhappy at City. And so there's certain players who, I'm not saying their heart's not in it, of course it is, but just that they're not kind of believing that they can prove a point and force their way into the first team. They know basically that their lot is to just be given the odd 1 or 2 games and then, you know, possibly leave in the summer. I mean, we've got 5 players who are out of contract this summer. And so it's hard to kind of, you know, see any kind of motivation for them there when they're not being offered extensions.
Do you think that that's a little bit to do with the way Pep has been with them, that they believe that? Because, I mean, on the face of it, they've got a really good example of someone who has fought their way back in Yaya Toure. So, in theory, they should be thinking, well, if he could do it, then I should be able to do it.
Well, yeah, if I put myself in the position of, sorry, Delph, for example, you know, really, if circumstance has gone against Delph, I thought he's a really good player for Villa. I thought he's a very pragmatic signing by City. And then injury, you know, he just succumbed to injury, and City fans have kind of written him off. And you get the impression, perhaps to an extent, the club has too. But someone like Dell should be thinking, well, I'm never going to play under Pep Guardiola again. If I leave this summer, it's going to be to, you know, without being disrespectful, but it's going to be to, say, a Burnley, for example.
Yeah.
I can. This is my one chance to play, you know, for City under Pep Guardiola. And his performance, I mean, City fans were quite complimentary about him. I thought he played poorly. I thought his touch was dire at the weekend. And so your heart sinks when you see that. And there are other players as well, like Navas, who will always work for you. You know, he knows he's on his way out, but he'll always give 100%. So it is always balanced out by the kind of the more kind of ethical players who will always put in a performance. But yeah, it's frustrating. You think, you know, go on, prove yourself. Like you say, Yaya Toure is a perfect case in point. It was over for him. It was done and dusted. And somehow he's just kind of revitalised his career with us. And it's brilliant to see.
Sergio Aguero does play. He doesn't score, obviously, because no one did. So I've done the maths there. But he's one who's been talked about a lot in the last week. The club have said they're not going to sell him, but then Guardiola did an interview where he sort of didn't really rule anything out in the future, which maybe you can't, and maybe you don't know, and you don't want to end up looking stupid. But what's your kind of reading, Stephen, on what's kind of going on with Guardiola at the moment?
With Sergio, I mean, yeah. I wrote something a couple of weeks ago. I wrote something a couple of weeks ago for a site, and I said that Sergio Aguero leaves, I will return to that site and write a love letter to Ryan Giggs, and naked on a block of ice. And then literally within 24 hours, I did a podcast and I got talking to this journalist who's, you know, quite decent connections with the club. And he said, now he's going to PSG, mate. I'm pretty sure it's looking like he's heading towards PSG this summer. He's stopped over there twice in the past few months, and he's had talks with the club, kind of, you know, behind the scenes. And so that wasn't great to hear on two fronts for me, really. but yeah, I hope he doesn't go. You know, this goal scoring record alone is phenomenal. 113 league goals, 169 appearances. I honestly believe that he could strike up a really good partnership with Jesus. Yeah, I think he inhabits the deeper spaces just naturally anyway. Jesus would be, you know, number nine essentially, and take on Aguero's role as it is now, and he'd just be a more deep lying forward. Whether he stays or not, it's just up in the air at the moment, and I very, very much hope the journalist was wrong.
I mean, it's there's comparisons made with the Sturridge situation at Liverpool, isn't there? In that there was you know, you've been watching City play recently with three, I'd say, forwards rather than any one striker, and that's how Liverpool have looked the best. And City did look very dynamic, but it's easier as a Liverpool fan, Mo, to see how Aguero fits into the City side. You know, you could see him doing a lot more of the stuff than you can with Sturridge, really. So as Sturridge is starting to just look like a kind of a bit of an odd man out at Liverpool, you're thinking, well, Aguero, you know, you could surely see him, as Steve's saying, kind of fitting in with what Guardiola wants.
He should be able to. And I think that there's a part of me that thinks that maybe it's down to him, because I seem to remember at the beginning of the season, he was making noises about, when I retire, I'm going to go back to Argentina, or thinking about a post-City career. And to hear someone say that at the very beginning of a season, that kind of set off a little light in my head. And now this Jesus has come and really challenged his position of the supremacy, which he's had at City for pretty much unquestioned for the last 5 years. It starts to make me think, does he want to stick it out? Does he want to go out and prove that he can adapt and he can play in this new era of City? Or is he happy to say, well, I'm nearly going to be the club's top goal scorer by the time I finish here. I've got you two Premier League titles. Thank you and good night.
Well, yeah, let's hope it's the former rather than the latter. And it's interesting bringing up Sturridge there, because, kind of, apologies for the name drop, but I was talking to one of your old boys recently, Jason McAteer, And he made a direct parallel between the two. And he had this fantastic rant, which, you know, I wholeheartedly agreed with as well, to an extent, where he said, goals don't seem to matter anymore. You know, the goal scoring rate of the Sturridges and the Agueros, he said, in his day, goals used to win your matches. And now it's all about kind of the work you do off the ball, the movement you make, etc. And yeah, I can see his point there. You know, look, the goals that Sturridge brings to you, the threat that he brings to you guys, and the same goes for Agüero. That can't be underestimated, surely, you know. And I always think about the opposition as well. You know, prior to a game, if they find out that Guerrero's on the bench, they're happy, aren't they? You don't want to make your opponent happy. So sometimes it just comes down to simple maths for me.
Okay. So you mentioned Jesus before as well. That must have been a real blow, his injury. It looks like he's out for the rest of the season, because he started like a house on fire, and I wasn't expecting anything from him this season, to be honest with you. I was thinking, oh, well, they're gonna have a bit of a look with him. He might play FA Cup games, you know, with Fabian Delph, and, you know, being just to see how he goes. But he's, you know, jumped straight in, and you've got to be careful, because, you know, everyone was calling Martial the second coming at one point, but, you know, he does look the absolute real deal, doesn't he?
He really does. I mean, before he joined, all you've got to go off is the YouTube vids, and we all know that you could see, you know, some kind of Eastern European player on YouTube, and he looks like a Lionel Messi. And in reality, you know, he's evidently not when you see him in the flesh, but you just got a sense. And also, you know, the quote that was coming out of Brazil as well. You know, I know we like to talk up there, kind of, you know, very talented young ones, but my God, you know, the calibre of player who was saying, this guy basically is the next Neymar. Just got you really kind of salivating. And then when I saw him, just immediate, hit the ground running. Absolutely amazing. His touch and just the awareness he has of the players around him for someone that young is phenomenal. So I was so excited. And what really struck me is when he went off, I was gutted for City, of course I was, but I was kind of also gutted for myself. I was just enjoying watching him.
Yeah, yeah.
And to know that now I have to wait till kind of August to see him again, you know, that was gutting.
What kind of way did City have to put in to get him? Because it seems to me that it's been kind of nailed on for a while, and that must be quite nice from a Man City fan point of view to know that, you know, you've been onto this guy for so long, because I'm sure, you know, he could have gone pretty much anywhere he wanted, but it seemed it was kind of nailed on for City. How long in the pipeline was the move?
A fair bit before the summer. It was basically between us, Real Madrid and Barca. And for one reason or another, it was more England rather than kind of, you know, Spain he chose. And it was Pep Guardiola who chose over the other coaches. So I think that was this kind of what swayed him was Pep. And again, going back to when it was announced, you know, last February about Guardiola and, you know, kind of officially announced that he'd be joining City, the first thought amongst many Blues was the fact that he can attract a certain calibre of player here. And this was the first example of that, you know, actually happening. So, there was kind of, you know, rumours. And, you know, you sense those different types of rumours. You know, which is just paper talk and which really does have some substance behind it. And immediately it's clear there was substance to this. And it's been a long wait, to be honest. And now to have to wait even longer is very frustrating.
I think City have done really well all round with Jesus, not just in terms of securing his signing, because traditionally, young players from South America, they will go to Spain or even Italy first before they come to England, because obviously not just the language, but the climate and everything around it can be quite a culture shock. But City have brought his mum over, his brother, a couple of his mates. They've set him up in a city. They've encouraged him to embrace the English life. And to his credit, he's done a really good job of that from what I've seen. So it's almost as if they've really kind of ironed out all the potential pitfalls for him, so he can just concentrate on getting on with his players on the pitch. And in terms of understanding, considering the amount of training he probably hasn't done with them, they hit it off straight away. And I think a lot of that being comfortable in the area has probably helped towards it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he gets pocket money from his mum. his mum sorts out his kind of wages for him and just gives him pocket money. So, yeah, because that's always a danger as well. You know, sorry for resorting to cliche and stereotype, but kind of South Americans, when they do come over to Europe, some of them do tend to kind of, you know, head towards a party lifestyle, and we've seen it on, you know, Adriano, for example. I just don't see it happening here with this lad. I think he is a family boy and he is grounded. And as regards to his understanding, I mean, seeing him against West Ham and that front three, you know, aged 21, 22, 23, that was fantastic. That's what I've wanted now for a while, where you just think, let's just invest in the best of youth. If we've got all this money and we've got all this sway and all the rest of it, mm-hmm. of course you want to see the superstars getting signed, but what you really want is, like, you know, just a handful of really talented kids, either through the system or plucked from elsewhere, and just kind of, you know, blossoming as City players. And I could see, you know, we've got a nucleus of a young side now, whereas last season we were the veterans of the Premier League, essentially. And I can see it really taking off, and it's really exciting.
Great stuff.
It's a difficult trick to do in such a short space of time, to go from a really old team to a really young team as well. And I've noticed in the past few years, City have been quite good in the FA Youth Cup and the Premier League as well. So are you expecting to see some more from the academy making their way into the first team?
The under-18s are unreal. It's almost unfair watching them.
They are. Our under-14s last season beat United 9-0 or 9-1? And then this season beat them again 9-0 or 9-1. So yeah, if we can continue that through the kind of levels, then yeah, that's pretty exciting. We've got a lad called Diaz who's amazing.
Yeah,
I mean, again, the whole next Messi thing. I know you've got to be very careful with that.
No, he's tore Liverpool apart a couple of times this season. At that level, yeah, obviously.
And Sanchez as well. So we've got a couple of really promising kind of, you know, flair attacking wide players. Just look on another level at the level they're at right now.
Yeah. Okay, just before we go, I've got to ask you about it. Me and Steve had a pint on Friday, and I said, what have you been up to? And he said, I've been playing walking football. And it wasn't what I was expecting, and he really sold it to me. And I'm just saying, I know you can't see us right now, Steve, but me and Mo, we're both lads who look like we've had a good Christmas. Yeah. Let's just say that. In fact, we look like we've had more than one in a row. So, I was really sold on walking football, because it's associated as an old man's game, if you like. But you're getting into it, aren't you?
I love it. I was asked to write about it for Yahoo, and I went along and I just thought it'd be a novelty, to be honest. I thought it'd be a bit of a laugh. I've seen the advert, you know, the bank advert on the telly. So I thought it would just be kind of, you know, a lot of healthy guys, which is great, you know, in terms of rehabilitation, getting over kind of illness or injury. That's wonderful. But there's lads there in their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. There's a father and son who play in the same team. Lads who played five-a-side, you know, the night before, but just do it because it's a completely different discipline. I've come to really love it. It's basically, if anyone out there considers themselves a Sunday League Beckenbauer, then this is for them.
Oh, it's
played entirely inside your head.
This is music to my ears. You know, I've got to tell you.
But no, because we were talking about this on Friday, and that's what you were saying. It's like it becomes so much more of a mental game. It's a tactical game, because you can't burst past someone or kind of knock someone out of their way, and it just kind of changes how much you kind of think about what you're doing, really.
It is. It is. When you're off the ball, you know, getting away from your mark is really hard. If you know, when you walk, you can't run. And when you've got the ball, passes have to be, you know, exact, because if you knock it too far in front of them, it'll just, you know, trickle out of play. So both with and without the ball, it makes you really think about what you're doing. And it's surprisingly tiring. But at the same time, the best thing about it is, if I used to play five-a-side, I'd be done. That was me done for the night, you know. I'd come home, take away at most was a box set or something. This, you can play it and then go out, you know, after. It's, and also, of course, you've got the social side as well, and it's a good laugh. But if anyone enjoys five-a-side, this is for them, because, like I say, it's a different discipline, but at the same time, the rules are essentially the same. It's just you can't break into a trot, and it's a good laugh.
Seriously, we need to get a team together. Like, my whole footballing style is based around the dead ball accuracy, whether passing or shooting. So not running with the ball, taking that out of the equation, suddenly I've just become Zidane.
Well, we'll look into it and see where we do. But huge thanks to Steve. He's writing really, really good stuff all the time, so get on him. His website's The Daisy Cutter. He's at The Daisy Cutter 1 on Twitter, I think that's right.
Cheers, mate. Yeah,
all right. So get him on there, and we'll speak to you soon. But right now, me and Mo, we're just going to have a bit of a chat about the magic of the FA Cup. It's just me and Mo now, and we're going to have a bit of a chat about the FA Cup, the magic of the FA Cup, or not, as the case may be. It seems to be that all we're able to talk about with regard to the FA Cup is whether it's still an important competition or not, whose fault it is, what could we do about it and things like that. And I'm just sort of of the opinion is, can't we just enjoy it? Because it feels like to me like there's still a lot to enjoy.
But people are forgetting about the actual football.
Yeah.
And I mean, not just about the excitement and the tenseness of the game, some of the quality of the goals. Like, if you watch on the BBC website, they've got the highlights of the goals in past rounds. Go back and watch some of them. There's been some absolute belters.
Yeah.
But we're not talking about that. We're all talking about, like you say, whose fault is it? We're trying to say, who's to blame? How can we fix this? Why isn't it as good anymore? When the reality is that a lot of the time, we're too focused on the background story, on the romance, on the as Gary from Lincoln said, the JCB driver side of the story.
When
rather than say, actually, these guys can play football and they're playing football really well, and just really that take that as the front page story.
Yeah, I mean, people would criticise about resting players and things like that, but if you look at who's still in the competition, you've got five of the top six. There's very much a top six in the Premier League now. Liverpool are the only ones who are out. But all the other five are still in there. But then you've got a smattering of really interesting clubs. You've had a brilliant run. Mm-hmm. You've beaten good teams. You know, you look at what Millwall have done. We're talking about Lincoln and Sutton, but the Millwall run's great. They beat three Premier League teams now there at the Den. And so you think, what kind of quarterfinals do we actually want? Do you know what I mean? What are people kind of wanting, really? Because we're seeing good games of football, we're seeing exciting, we've got stories, there's drama, and you know, you look at the FA Cup between now and the end of the season, you think, well, that looks like the interesting competition to me.
I think it's interesting because there's a lot of wanting to have your cake and eat it with this kind of attitude, I think, because like you say, the magic that people have so lauded has basically come from a lot of the so-called sacrilegious changes that have been made by certain teams that further down the divisions. But in terms of the league's pyramid and where those players are, the bottom half, the top half of the Championship, for example, I was talking with Neil on another show earlier. I think there hasn't been a team that's gone up to been promoted to Premier League and got to quarterfinals in the same year for over 12 years.
Yeah.
Because it just gets to that stage where it's like, if it's one or the other, we're going to go in that direction.
But, yeah, and what you're supposed to do, and I've seen people say, well, they need to make the prize money bigger for the FA Cup. I think, well, Gutman's argued that, you know, make a £50 million team and people take it more seriously, but Leeds still aren't going to win it.
No.
So you look at someone like that, they're still not going to win it. And so they're obviously in the situation where the pot of the Premier League is just too big, and, you know, it's just something's got to give.
You know what would be, what I genuinely think would make some teams in that bracket take it more seriously is if Lincoln win it. Because they can't say, oh, well, we're not going to win it anymore, can they? That argument is completely blown out the window.
If Leicester can win the Premier League, then why not? They're in the quarterfinals.
My most successful tweet ever was saying, is Lincoln winning the FA Cup any more ridiculous than Leicester winning the Premier League? It's actually a shorter odds, 2,000 to 1 at the beginning of the Cup compared to 5,000 for Leicester.
Well, in theory, because they say over a league campaign, the best team should win it, whereas the Cup's a lot more of a lottery, so maybe it's not. And they're a good team, as we said.
Indeed. See, I mean, I think it can be slightly a case of kind of convincing yourself of these things sometimes, but I think we just need to relax and let the FA Cup be the FA Cup.
Yeah.
Like, there are lots of things in society that aren't the same as they were in the 70s and 80s. Most of them aren't changing. So I think we need to... We can be too easily forget the good things that we have got in trying to regurgitate the magic of the past.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, do you know what? When I've gone to cup games this season, I've actually looked forward to watching different players. So, you know, I know maybe it's not the same for kind of young kids who are getting the first taste and want to see the superstars. I understand that, but you know, I watch a lot of Liverpool games, and you know, I watch a lot of youth football, and I was made up when, you know, Ben Woodburn gets his go. I'm looking forward to seeing Trent Alexander-Arnold and how he plays the situations. You know, it's been, I guess, good to see someone like Kev Stewart emerge and you kind of evaluate him and is he someone who can do a job for you? The manager needs to find out. And so, you know, do we actually have to see the same 11 players all the time, or is it sometimes more fun to go, okay, well, let's see how some of the kids do. Oh, well, we signed this lad and somebody hasn't got to have a go yet. Let's see how he does with these players.
100%. I mean, going back to the League Cup game against Leeds where Ben Woodburn scored, I guarantee
it's one of the moments of the season.
Yeah, and everyone who's at that game is going to remember it and remember the moment. And I think for me, the difference is you should be able to go into those games excited about seeing some new players. I worry when it's more than 6-7 changes, I'd say, because what you're doing then is you're asking them all en masse to go in together, and you have the argument of, well, they're used to playing with each other, but then you have the counter argument that if it's not going well, then they're looking around saying, well, who's going to be the one to drive us to victory here? So I think from a perspective of the manager as well, if he's looking at, say, Trent with the rest of the setup back four, then he's probably going to get a better idea of if he can play in that first team than if it's a mixed and match job.
Yeah. But then from, it's a tricky one. Our managers will have to balance it. I think from a Liverpool point of view, it was just wasn't ideal time because of what was going on with the League Cup. And I think that's maybe something they need to think about, is kind of separating the competitions more really. Mm-hmm. And could you have League Cup semi-finalists by Christmas and then everyone just kind of, you know, you could have a gap to the final. Yeah. And I think they do that in some countries. You know, there's a 2-3 month gap. So could you say, okay, we're going to commit to getting the League Cup up to semi-final level, go back to one leg and say we're going to get that done before the FA Cup starts? And I think that might be something, because I think for Liverpool and Southampton, who've obviously both gone out, and you know, it was a situation by then where they just thought, you know, this is just you know, there's just too many games in January.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens to Man United over the next few weeks, because they've got the League Cup, they've got the Europa, they're basically the only team that's still in everything. And if they end up winning nothing, then I can see it potentially having a bearing on the future. Yeah. In terms of
Van Gaal won the FA Cup and still got sacked. So it's one of those. So sometimes, is there anything we can do about ownership? You look at Kenny Dalglish when he was at Liverpool, won a League Cup, got to an FA Cup final, lost his job. Van Gaal gets the FA Cup, lost his job. So I think that is something that we can't do anything about. We can't tell chairman that they need to change their priorities, because if the priorities are a league position and Champions League and that's where you need to be, then, you know, we can talk about it all we want, but we're not kind of going to change that. But I don't think me and you are going to change anything today anyway, to be honest.
Yeah, that might be a slightly optimistic aim for today. I'm probably going to go and see Trainspotting later today. That's probably my aim for the day.
So. Which is good as place. It's good a thing to do as any. Huge thanks to Mark. Thanks to Gary from Lincoln City. Well, I say from Lincoln City, supports them. Stacey Westblock, who was on first, and obviously to Steve Cutter from Man City as well. But that has been me and Mo and the coach home.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and Talkspace, the leading virtual therapy provider, is sharing the message that connection is crucial, because good relationships are an essential and sometimes overlooked component of mental well-being. If your relationships could use some strengthening, a licensed therapist from Talkspace can help. Therapy can help you communicate better with loved ones, repair conflicts, and understand how to address loneliness and build community. It's easy to sign up. Just go to Talkspace.com and you'll be paired with a therapist within 2 days. You'll meet with your therapist online on your schedule. Plus, Talkspace is in network with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. Make personal connections a priority and start today. If you're not covered by insurance, get $80 off your first month with Talkspace when you go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80. That's SPACE80. To match with a licensed therapist today, go to Talkspace.com and enter promo code SPACE80.